From the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Monday, April 7th. I'm Abby Larico. Missouri author Soumen Chandani knows it's a challenge to get kids off their screens and into a book. So his witchy new work taps into his own childhood interests.
I love kind of B movies that were kind of blood-soaked, but in kind of a beautiful way, like Bram Stoker's Dracula and Frankenstein.
A new graphic novel for kids that's inspired by the horror genre. Coming up after this news on The Gateway. A Missouri appeals court has ruled that St. Louis County election officials will count the votes of a measure that would allow the county council to fire department directors. Proposition B would allow the council to terminate department leaders and the county councilor with 5 out of 7 votes. Some of St. Louis County Executive Sam Page's department directors sued over the ballot measure, contending, among other things, that its summary is misleading. But 3 Missouri Court of Appeals judges wrote in an opinion filed Friday that the lower court didn't have the authority to strike the measure off Tuesday's ballot. They did add, however, that if Proposition B passes, Page's directors could challenge the measure to keep it from going into effect. The council contains 6 members who are generally opposed to Page, which potentially gives them enough votes to fire department leaders if voters do approve Proposition B. Flooding along the Merrimack River means some voters in Jefferson County will cast their ballots at a different location. A Missouri appeals court panel ruled Friday that election officials could move the polling place at Brookdale Farms to a firehouse about 5 minutes away. The Merrimack is expected to reach major flood stage today, making it impossible to access the event space. Flooding in November stranded poll workers at the site. The move required court intervention because the firehouse at 4849 Missouri 109 is located in St. Louis County. The councils in Hannibal and Rolla have proposed that their cities stop water fluoridation out of concern for adverse health effects. It comes after Utah's governor signed a bill into law banning the addition of fluoride into that state's public water systems. But Dr. William Morkamp, who's a dentist in Rolla, says the dental health of children that are unable to get adequate amounts of fluoride would decline if these measures went into effect.
The children developing their enamel from birth to age 6 will have defective or less strong enamel. Their enamel will grow weaker for the rest of their life.
Some Missouri towns, including Branson and Houston, have already stopped water fluoridation. The recommended level of fluoride in drinking water, as per the CDC, is 0.7 milligrams per liter. Last year, no community water system in Missouri averaged over 1 milligram per liter of fluoride concentration levels. Federal cash to help low-income households pay utility bills could be at risk, as the Trump administration recently laid off the program's entire staff. Federal workers administering the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program were among approximately 10,000 jobs cut from the Department of Health and Human Services last week. Darren Priest is the executive director at Central Missouri Community Action, the organization that helps people in mid-Missouri access the assistance.
We serve people for 1 or 2 years who are in a crisis, and we help them through a rough time, and they can get back on their feet. It's not necessarily people who are chronically poor who are using this program. It's everyday Missourians who just need a little help to get through this month.
Priest says that the agency does not anticipate any immediate disruption to services since most of the federal dollars for the next few months have already been sent to Missouri. Nearly 130,000 Missourians received federal utility bill assistance last year. President Trump's return to the White House is prompting some St. Louis area residents to scale back their time on social media platforms. Others, though, say they're using the sites more. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum reports on why the Trump news deluge is motivating some people to look elsewhere.
St. Louis resident Joshua Lawrence says recently paring back on social media made him feel better and more focused on following politics in the city of St. Louis.
Your alder has the most local power, and they're the easiest to sort of get to if we're just playing a pure numbers game.
Brad Hicks also cut down on social media use since Trump returned to the White House. The St. Louis resident says since Trump thrives on uncertainty, following national news on social media platforms is immensely challenging.
The average news consumer wants to know with certainty what's going to happen in a couple of months.
Data from the Pew Research Center shows 54% of respondents primarily connect to current events through social media. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listeners who tuned in to local community radio station KDHX on Saturday morning instead heard Christian programming from national radio broadcasters K-Love. By Saturday afternoon, KDHX had resumed its typical programming, but the station is in talks to sell its transmitter and broadcast license to the Tennessee-based K-Love. The company operates hundreds of Christian radio stations in the U.S. KDHX has filed for bankruptcy after months of turmoil. The station lost significant support after some volunteer DJs were dismissed in 2023. Others resigned in protest, and the station stopped live broadcasts earlier this year. It is unclear why KDHX was airing K-Love programming, as a judge must approve the estimated $4.3 million sale before it goes through. KDHX officials did not respond to requests for comment. A local woman wants to convert a small neighborhood lot in North St. Louis into a place of honor for the thousands of black soldiers who fought in the Civil War. St. Louis Public Radio Sarah Fentum reports community activist and businesswoman Carla Coffey Wright wants to fund the U.S. Colored Troops Memorial Park through donations and fundraising efforts.
Around 200,000 African-American soldiers served in the military during the Civil War. Soldiers served in artillery and infantry and also worked as cooks, nurses, boat pilots, and other non-combat roles. Black soldiers were stationed in St. Louis at Benton Barracks, which is now Fairground Park. Carla Coffey Wright has owned the lot for years. She was inspired to make the yard into a memorial when she learned her own ancestors served in the Civil War.
It doesn't have to be a lot, just enough to do the job and let people feel proud and appreciate who they are. Because, I mean, a lot of us don't know our history.
Wright says she wants to fence in the property and build a garden, a memorial, and a small interpretive center and gift shop. I'm Sarah Fentum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listener support is STLPR's largest source of revenue and makes podcasts like The Gateway possible. Show your support for regional news by making a gift at stlpr.org or give us a call at 314-516-4000.
Somin Chinani is on a mission to get kids to read. And not just one of the millions of books he's sold as a children's author, he wants to get kids into any book. The St. Louis author's debut graphic novel, Coven, taps into a childhood passion for horror. He told Laura Spencer from the Kansas City Public Library that the book continues the story of witches from his School for Good and Evil series, which was adapted by Netflix.
You've talked about how childhood experiences, watching Disney animated movies and later learning the gaps between the original stories and the Disney versions, informed the School for Good and Evil. What inspired Coven?
You know, parents are having trouble getting their kids off the screens and into a book. You know, I thought, you know, what kind of stuff did I love when I was young? I loved horror. I loved monster movies. I loved kind of B movies that were kind of blood soaked, but in kind of a beautiful way, like Bram Stoker's Dracula and Frankenstein. And I thought, if I make a book like that, that's something a parent can give a kid and they start reading and they hopefully will be more tempting than the screen.
In Coven, these characters are in high demand as detectives and peacekeepers, and they're asked to help in a place called Red Isle, where the light and dark lands are on the brink of war. And there are mysterious deaths, each side blaming the other. I wonder if you could tell us about the substance called Raka.
It's almost a pretty clear analogy for oil. You know, it comes out of the ground. It's pure red. It's the kind of source of all the vitality in the island. And the Lightlanders have pulled it out of the ground and used it to build the most technologically advanced society you can imagine, far beyond ours. And then you have the Darklanders who really believe it has to stay in the ground, that once you start taking it out of the ground, bad things will happen. The witches are called because all of a sudden these, as you said, mysterious deaths start to happen, which are that people's faces start getting erased and then they drop down dead, which harken back to these kind of B-movie, you know, horror things that I loved. You know, as I pitched to my publisher, I was like, I want to do a serial killer murder mystery, B-horror thing, but it's going to be for kids. And they're like, okay. I'm like, I promise it'll work.
Coven is illustrated by Joel Ganari, known for this puppet building for the Jim Henson Company. You know, in some of the pages, there's a comic book style text expressing sounds like smash or snap. What was this experience like?
Graphic novel, it's the artist's show in a lot of ways. And your job as the writer is to, almost like a screenwriter, present the ultimate kind of script and then try to direct the artist through it. You know, the artist is spending years on this, in this case, 3.5 years on it. So it is really a collaboration. And I think it speaks directly to the anxieties that kids are facing, that there's something about the world that feels unstable to them.
You're a Harvard alum, and in an article for Harvard Magazine, you described fairy tales as tapping into the subconscious, bringing to light children's deepest fears. Is that why you decided to tackle environmental issues in this book?
Definitely. When I first had the image, all I had in my head was the faces of, you know, vanishing, and the idea of these two cultures on an island, one that pulls the rock out of the ground and one that doesn't. And I think as I started to work on it, I started to realize that the two things were linked, you know, that the killer, the one that erases the faces, was tied to this. And it actually became quite an interesting allegory for where our world is going and all the things that we're doing.
When you release a book, you often visit schools. Why is that important to you?
It's my favorite thing about the job. I've done it over 800 times, and I'll be doing it again another 40 or 50 times on this tour, where I go into schools. And what's great about it is I'm not talking to my readers. I'm not talking to fans of the School for Good and Evil. I'm going into an auditorium of anywhere from 300 to 500 kids 3 times a day. And I would say 80% of these kids don't read. You know, they don't read anything. And so I have two jobs, not just to get them to read my book, but to get them to read in general. There's something about it, I love the challenge of it.
That was author Soumen Chandani speaking with Laura Spencer. The story was produced with the Kansas City Public Library. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.